said, yes, some works of wells have carved more than 8 feet. He said that two stations have the
bore.
Is that one? Could you repeat the question?
I will. He asked what other station has a community. I'm answering. What other station has a functioning, qualified community advisory board? And my understanding is that Washington, D.C. has that, WPFW. But I can't verify that. I've just been told that it's functional. I met the woman who is the head of the board, the community advisory board. She's the chair of the CAB. So I've had preliminary conversations with her. I'm under the impression that they do meet and that it is it meets our qualifications. It meets the qualifications of the community advisory board. But those are the only two stations I know of that have functional, regularly meeting, documented, open meeting community advisory boards.
Maxie,
a
follow-up question on that.
And WBAI, the two of them, the three of them, are not even following the bylaw, but they talk permanently about the bylaws, right? It's very clear it's in the bylaws.
Right, it's in the bylaws. Maxie, I have a follow-up question on that. So the WPFW station has a CAB that meets, and I think they have the meetings noticed on the station's website, but they need to be put on the KPFTX calendar, and would it help to have the meetings put on there, after the fact that they've already been held, at least to post their minutes to show that they've attended the meetings.
Yeah, my understanding that the CPB requirement is that it be posted at the local station's website. So I don't know if it would have to go on KPFTX, although, I don't see why that couldn't be done, and I don't see why there would be a problem with doing it. For all the reasons you gave.
Okay. Phil, do you have any questions for Maxie? I think you're muted.
If nobody has anything else, I have a question. If nobody has anything
else. Tony, do you have a question for Maxie?
No, I just have some concerns more than questions.
Raise it.
Okay. The BBC, if I heard you right, I heard you say that you may be pursuing discussions with possibly having programming from the BBC concerning Africa.
Yep.
Okay, so
let me explain it. Go ahead. Finish your question.
Let Tony finish his question.
My concern about that has to do with getting an interpretation about Africa from a European country instead of going straight to Africa and getting it directly from Africans.
It's a great point. Here's the issue there. Distribution of content directly from the continent of Africa and any specific nation, I've found has proven very difficult. I tried to do that when I was running the programming at WETA in Washington, D.C. years ago. One of the big issues is that there's not a continental-wide service that offers its programming for international distribution. You have a lot of services on the continent that speak in either French or Kiswahili or Swahili or some other regional dialects, and so those obviously wouldn't work. Your concern with the European perspective of the BBC, in some respects, I would argue, is not founded. in a sense that even though the BBC obviously is a British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, I think, and this is debatable, but I mean, I think you could argue Democracy Now in the same manner, with all due respect. The BBC is noted universally as one of the premier journalistic news outfits around the globe. Furthermore, there's no other organization that has the footprint globally. On the ground is unprecedented, and nobody can match it. So when I look at BBC Africa content, there are programs, if you go to the BBC website and go to bbc.co/Africa, something like that, you'll see programs like Profiles on Africa and Africa Today. The hosts are Africans. The editorial staffs are Africans. They just happen to be doing broadcasting for a service that not only is targeting Africans, but has access points throughout the continent of Africa. I know for a fact that that programming would be of keen interest to people from the continent of Africa who live in Houston, who live in D.C., and who live in New York. I programmed it in D.C., and there was a large Ethiopian and other African countries represented in that part of the country who certainly gravitated to that content. The other reason I'm attracted to the BBC programming is we are in markets that are dynamically international. They're global cities. Houston is the most dynamic in terms of diversity of all the cities in the country. And there are large international pockets and communities in Houston, New York, D.C., Berkeley, and in L.A. If we have an opportunity to provide content that speaks directly to their global perspectives and their needs for that information, the BBC, to me, is about as good an option as we can find. I would love to have content directly from Asia. I would love to have content directly from South and Central America for our Hispanic, pan-Hispanic or pan-Latino communities. I would love to do the same for other ethnic groups that are part of our dynamic range of possibilities in each of the markets we serve. What I can tell you, though, is that very few NPR public radio stations air the BBC beyond the news hour at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. They may do it overnight, but there is a host of programming that could be used in evening drive, perhaps the midday, or on weekends in small amounts, an hour perhaps in each drive or whatever, that would give us an opportunity to literally say that we provide global coverage with a progressive perspective, that we not only include sort of a global understanding of issues that the BBC provides, but that we bring it home with Democracy Now! To the national front, and that our local stations, the news programming and public affairs that they do, grounds it in hyper-local content. And so I think having that kind of programming appeal would actually be a real advantage for Pacifica stations in the markets we serve. And I'm looking at competitive advantages in the market, and I'm looking at ways for us to provide content that would be useful for audiences that perhaps we're not getting to right now that I would argue are largely underserved. So I hope that answers your question.
I have a follow-up question to that, Maxie.
Nancy, this is I'm sorry, this is Otis, and I'd like to be on the stack because I have two issues that I need to bring up.
Okay.
Including Dwayne has been quite quiet tonight, so it's probably closed him down.
Okay, I'll get to you guys next. Okay.
I still have another question as well.
Okay, great. I would, is there some place that we can pick up and sample these programs that you're proposing from the BBC?
I'm not. First of all, it's premature for me to say I'm proposing any programs. What I can do, though, is I can provide the website for BBC World Service and for some of the programs for the continent of Africa, and make that available so that folks on the board can understand sort of what's in view. But again, let's be real clear. This is part of a programming strategy that, you know, I have yet to entertain the PDs and GMs at our stations. I want to give them a philosophy behind the approach. I want them to dissect it, wrestle with it, determine whether it has value, and determine if it makes sense for us to engage in programming like that. I know it's not traditional for Pacifica, but what we know for a fact is that the Pacifica programming model is not successful. And if we want to win day parts, if we want to be more effective in generating audience for the real progressive content that we provide in our local programming, we do need to have some anchor programming. And I think we need to find ways to attract new audiences to our stations and recognize that many of the social, political, cultural justice issues that we deal with and want to bring light to are global in nature. And the BBC actually does a real good job of highlighting a lot of those struggles, those fights, those issues on a global level. And I think it's important for us to see beyond what is normal for Pacifica, what is common, I should say, and maybe look at ways to not so much upset the cart, but to think beyond what has been our traditional approach and say, you know what, maybe there is some value in an acute marriage between national syndicated and globally syndicated content and what we do locally.
Okay, go ahead, Otis.
Okay, I want to add to what Maxie said. One of the things you won't see on the BBC World Service thing is that there are a number of what they call services, and the BBC actually has an African service with programs about Africa, for Africa, by Africans. One of the wonderful things that the internet does is gives us access to those, even though they're not on the APR satellite. So anyway, I just want to mention that, and that also applies to South Asia. For instance, in Houston, there's a huge South Asian population. In fact, one of our most popular shows on KPFT is Generation Radio, which is run by a bunch of ABCDs. Anyway, that's one of the things I want to say. And I'm just saying that one of the things that, and this is my opinion, and I'm speaking as an ex-PD because I've done that job. One of the things that's going on right now is we have more stuff on the internet than you can possibly imagine. This gives us the opportunity to pick and choose things for people who don't want to spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out what they want to listen to. The other thing is, there are political issues at each station which are preventing shows from being heard. And some of our shows are extremely heavily listened to, as I could show in the archive, but they're not on the air. That's pretty silly. Okay, that's one thing. The next thing is to you, Nancy. Where did you get the idea the CPB doesn't post on KPFTX? They are a committee just like everybody else, and they've been posting on KPFTX for 15 years.
What, CABs?
The CABs. The
No, I said WPFW's CAB does not post on KPFTX.
Yes, they do. When they have meetings, which to be rare in D.C., but in Houston and in Berkeley and in Los Angeles, they do meet regularly, mm-hmm. and they do post, and they have to post because that way they get the post on the front page of every station, which is required
right.
by the CPB. So that is actually handled.
What? I was probably just looking at this year's, and I didn't look at past years.
Not many. Not many, but I can tell you that Marianne Martinez is very active in Houston.
That's
Madam Chair.
Otis, real quick.
It's not part of time.
So, Dwayne, you're next. This is just a Q&A. We're not in a meeting. We're not having an official meeting.
Who was the gentleman that just spoke?
That was Otis.
Okay, well, I don't know if Otis lives in Houston or not, but Marianne has not been involved in the CAB for at least 2 years now, so he misspoke or he just don't know, whichever. But also,
you have a question for Maxie?
Well, I have a comment and a question for Maxie, and much of which I'll
try to
discuss with Maxie.
Go ahead.
Personally, because I have a personal relationship with most of the chairs and the presidents of many of the local African diaspora. In fact, I just met today with the Kenyan president.
Wait, Dwayne, you're breaking up. Could you try to stabilize your call there?
I have contact and been in contact with many of the African diaspora communities here in Houston. The Ethiopian, I just met today with the Kenyan president or chairman of the largest group, which there are at least 7 African diaspora groups in Houston. The smallest is the Kenyan. The largest, of course, is the Nigerian and all in between, the Ethiopian. And what we should find, if you've had this experience, it's almost just like with the Latino, as Maxie referred to, and the Hispanic. They are fragmented because Guatemalans from South America is not interested in what's going on in Honduras. Honduras is not interested in what's going on with Mexico. So while this sounds great, it's more problematic than you think, because if you live in a city like Houston, you know that Kenyans really not interested in the Ethiopian country's experience, and the Nigerian is not interested in what's going on in the southern part of Africa. So all of this, it's not an easy mix. It's not going to be an easy job, but as far as my experience with speaking with these individuals and having now 15 to 20 years experience with some of these groups in the Houston area, they don't really trust the BBC. So I think Pacifica is a brand that they could trust. And if you brand it Pacifica and not try to tag on to the BBC, because we can use our brand with the 300 or more affiliates. We can use our brand with the Internet. And as it relates to how do you really find out whether this is supported by these various endemic groups, I think the HD channels are our best test market because we can do HD programs with almost all of these groups, and these people can get this information not just through our band, through our HD2 or HD3, well, we sold HD3 band, but through the Internet if we're broadcasting on HD. So there are a lot of ways in which to do this, but I just don't believe that horse of the BBC is so accepted by many of these Americanized groups that are from the African diaspora. Just need to make that point because I have personal experience here in Houston with all of these groups.
Thank you, Dwayne.
I have a question. What is AC? I've never heard that term in radio before. What is AC? You're talking about the signal, the terrestrial signal?
I said HD.
Oh, HD. Oh, okay.
HD. He said HD.
Well, HD reaches three people.
I'm a trained radio person. I go 40
years
back.
Thank you.
I didn't understand.
All right, thank you. Okay, thank you. So, this is the type of concern that is going to be coming up over and over again. Did you have a question for Maxie? Dwayne?
Let me respond to what Dwayne said.
You want to respond to what Dwayne said? Okay, go ahead.
I do.
And yeah. Trying to get on the list here for at least...
Yeah, I got you, Benito. I got you. You're on the stack. Okay, go ahead,
yeah.
Maxie.
Yeah, with all due respect to what Dwayne said, and I'm not going to debate his knowledge of and connections with the Pan-African community in Houston, Texas. But again, like I said, I actually program Pan-Asian and Pan-African content in Washington, D.C. for 3.5 years. What I can tell you is that we probably would need to do some focus group research to get a real definitive understanding whether the BBC brand has value or is looked upon negatively by residents in the community, if you will. That's the first thought I would have for that. The second part is that, you know, I don't look at the BBC as our only play to these communities. I see it as an entry point. And let's be real clear, and I think Otis would endorse this. The BBC Africa service profiles people from throughout the continent. And so, you know, if I was Nigerian, if I only want to hear Nigerian stuff, I think that's a pretty limited perspective. That's like, you know, people in America not wanting to know anything about the rest of the world. It's kind of nonsensical. And maybe that's not even the audience we're trying to get at. The bottom line is what I'm trying to say is...
Good in this country. Population is real large.
Wait, stop. Order, please. Please don't talk over each other. We cannot hear either one of you when you talk over each other. Thank you.
Yeah, again, I'm not arguing or debating Dwayne on this. I'm simply saying that the best way for us to determine what is valid is to actually do some community engagement with the Pan-African communities in D.C., New York, and in Houston in particular, and find out how the BBC brand resonates there. But as Otis mentioned, I think the BBC Africa service, I think most people from the continent would acknowledge that it, as we said, is for Africa, by Africans, hosted by Africans, and produced by Africans. And that service, I think, does a really good job of capturing the humanity on the continent, addressing social, political, economic, and cultural issues on the continent. And if you're an African-American in Houston, I think the ability to extend your understanding of the diaspora would be a value proposition unto itself. But make no mistake, I am very clear in my knowledge and awareness that airing the BBC does not resolve the issue of being relevant to international people, and it does not serve as the only way that we can expand audience and increase listenership. I see it as just one aspect of a programming strategy that says we're going to offer global, national, and hyper-local programming, and it's part of a whole suite of content that would make our morning drive, I think, more effective. It would certainly give us some anchor programming in the evening drive to be complemented by what we developed for national programming as the Pacifica national programming rolls out in hopefully in the near future, and some of the stuff that's being produced locally. I look at it as part of a larger programming strategy. It's not a one-off, and it's not the only angle to programming expansion. So, again, I just think we need to do some research to really get a grounded understanding. I'm about being fact-based, research-driven, data-driven, and I welcome the opportunity to work with Dwayne on Houston and anyone else who wants to do it in the other markets.
I'm not the chair.
Did you still have another question?
Does Maxie know the Maxie, do you know the penetration rate of KPFT? In general, do you know the penetration rate in the African-American community, and do you know the penetration rate in the African diaspora?
What I know is that the total audience for KPFT right now is somewhere around 48,000.
I said the penetration rate. I'm not interested in the raw numbers.
Well, maybe I don't know what you mean by penetration rate.
The penetration rate means that 99.9% of all radio listeners have never listened to KPFT. 99.999% of the African diaspora has never listened to KPFT. But more important, why I ask that question is, and this is Arbitron, it's not me making this up, but why I ask that question is because in the African-American community, it's been totally underserved. There was an opportunity to increase it exponentially when a station 75 years old called KCOH, which was the only perennial political public affairs station that existed specifically for African Americans in Houston sold its airways to Radio Maria, not Radio Maria, but to a Catholic entity. And what I'm saying to you is that KPFT has, Pacifica has not taken advantage
of that, and that penetration rate is still, if not, reduced. And it's ridiculous to concentrate on Africans when, in fact, the largest, Houston is the sixth largest market in this nation. Texas has two of the six largest markets in this nation, and we've not addressed that.
Let me respond, Dwayne, and let me just say, first of all, I'm not targeting, in terms of Houston, the African community. It's one of many targets. I actually think Adriana Castaneves did an excellent job of presenting the opportunity that exists with the pan-Hispanic or pan-Latino community that exists in Houston as well. So I am the last person who believes that KPFT is programming effectively, that it has tapped into opportunity. There's no question in my mind that there is an amazing opportunity to fill void. What we know for a fact is that both in Hispanic and African-American media, news and public affair content is extremely low. It's probably at an all-time low after black ownership dissolved in most of our urban centers. And so there's an amazing opportunity in all of the markets we serve to be more relevant to people of color. So I don't look at the African market as the primary audience. I certainly don't see them as the most significant one. I'm with you on that all the way. The first priority to me when it comes to Houston, to New York, and to D.C., and actually I should just say universally, is for our stations to more reflect the communities that represent demographically the markets we serve. And you can make a case that in none of our markets are we doing that. And so I'm with you on that all the way, Dwayne. You don't have to – there's no debate between you and I on that. And I just don't want there to be a disproportionate understanding of what I'm trying to do with the BBC. I just know that the BBC's global impact does attract a very specific niche audience that I think would come running to our stations as an outlet if they knew the BBC was available at reliable times. But I think we need to do the same kind of work to cultivate African-American and Hispanic communities in Houston, New York, and D.C., to be relevant to Asian communities in Los Angeles and Hispanic communities in L.A., and Berkeley, the same thing. So we've got a lot of work to do to be the diverse programming service that we should be, can be, and in my opinion will be once we start doing the community engagement work I've always talked about, and once we start staffing to reflect that, and our community advisory boards reflect that, and we recognize that there is an opportunity, not an obstacle, in reaching people of color. I'm with you all the way.
Oh, I appreciate that. I think it's been a deliberate effort not to go after the African-American market here in Houston. I deduce that, Madam Chair. Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you for your question. Benito?
Adriana?
You were next. Okay, you'll be after Benito.
So I have two quick questions about from the earlier conversation, and then I have a comment about the BBC issue. So number one, Maxie, what are the three governance or PMB categories that you would use in this slotted approach? And can you send this proposal, governance proposal, to the PMB?
Yeah, I'm going to wait on sending the proposal around until Jan gives me some feedback. She asked me to work on it with her. And I'm going to respect the fact that she's asked me to. I certainly think if anyone wants to join the two of us in putting this together, that invitation is open. And I would certainly welcome the participation. I think the more engaged board members I have, that we have on this initiative, the more likely it has traction. So I'm for that. One of the things in terms of the slots, just keep this in mind, on a local level, okay, if we're talking Washington, D.C., which is the market I use as an example on the proposal. In fact, I should pull it up real quick if you give me a second here. Yeah. One of the things you have to do is you have to do a demographic breakdown of the market, of the region of the country, and understand demographically what should be the proportional representation of white folk, black folk, brown, yellow, etc. That you have a board that reflects the community that you serve. That's number one. The second thing is you want to make sure you have equal proportion gender-wise, male, female. You also want to make sure that the counties that you serve are reflective of the counties that are in your coverage map. Now, if the bulk of your listenership is in the city proper, then you can weight it so that, let's say in D.C., the majority of your board members come from the district. But you also want to include PG County, Montgomery County, Fairfax County, and perhaps some other counties that surround the D.C. metro, so that your community advisory board really is a reflection of what they call the DMV. And then in terms of the last area, so you've got demographic, then you've got geographic. The third area is what are the professions, the areas of experience or exposure that you want on the board. And so one of the slots would clearly be about activism. You'd want to have a good proportion of activists, people who are professional activists or people who have experience, deep experience as activists. You would want people who are part of nonprofits. You would want people who have accounting and finance backgrounds. You'd want people who have development and fundraising backgrounds. You want to make sure you have some people who have media expertise, particularly in digital media, podcasting, and sort of new media, if you will, in addition to traditional. You'd want to make sure that you got some people who are in social justice areas, who represent perhaps legal backgrounds. You want to create a board that has some kind of composition of expertise so that not only when you come together and discuss issues that need to be covered, you've got people who know those issues intimately and can connect you to the players around that issue. But when it comes to just strictly radio station operations, you want to have people who can look at the finances and know what they're looking at and know it because they actually are professional in that in financial management or budgeting or whatever. You want people who know the future of media, who can say, for you to do a podcasting strategy, these are the things that need to happen, and I can work with your program director to help make that manifest. You need people who are experienced in fundraising, who can say, you know what, I either have deep pockets or I know people who do, and I can create events or dinners or receptions or special events to get moneyed people who support progressive causes to donate and support Pacifica here in the market and maybe even nationally. So what we're talking about is slotting the board in each local market, specific to that market. Not every market's the same. And so there's different social justice issues that resonate more in maybe D.C. than they do in Houston. I know that the prison industrial complex and in particular executions are a big deal in Houston, much more than they probably are in New York. Maybe, I don't know. And so maybe there would be a leaning to have people in that discipline in the Houston cab, where New York may focus on a whole other issue, maybe around housing. So I hope that's a clear understanding of how the slotted board sort of concept works. The key is you want to have representation and expertise. That's really what drives the purpose.
All right. So then with regard to, basically you're just saying three basic categories. So now with regard to the BBC,
mm-hmm.
I can sort of understand to an extent the urge and need to use a service that is worldwide. Nevertheless, like I always say about saving the station here at PFW, you know, we can put Rush Limbaugh on the air and he would raise tons of money. Question is, do we want to go in that direction?
Well, clearly not.
So Well, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that that's what some people. I'm not so sure that some people that we work with would not like that. Unfortunately.
I feel you.
But my point is that there are alternatives to BBC. And I don't know about them all. I know about one. And that one is CGTN, China Global Television Network, which has three global bureaus, one in D.C., and the other in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And they have 24/7, well, I should say seven days a week, African programming. New shows as well as weekly, and news shows meaning not just the political news, which they specialize in, but also financial and economic news.
Yeah.
And then also weekly shows. And all of these are produced and hosted by Africans. And unlike the BBC, which is the bottom line, they produce programming which comes from a progressive / democratic, small d, democratic perspective as opposed to imperative. So that's all I have to say.
You know, what I will say is that I would certainly welcome you forwarding me information about them. There are two things that come to mind off the bat that would be question marks for me. Number one, you said that they're a television service. Do they have radio assets, audio assets, and do they even make them available for distribution in the Americas? What kind of arrangement will we have to make? I'm certainly open to it specifically if it's all the things that you said. I would love to have a service that is reliable, that gives us a broader sense of things, that has excellent journalism and a plethora of content opportunities. No question about it. So, again, forward that information to me, a link. One of the other members of the PNB suggested an alternative to the BBC on one of our previous calls, and it turned out to be a complete no-go in the sense that the service that was offered didn't have anything other than a sporadic 5-minute newscast. And so that's not an option that's going to serve us. But if this is a service that has, serial, regularly scheduled programming, weekly, daily, and it's available for broadcast on a radio platform, I certainly would be interested. There was something else mentioned about HD radio, and I want to be real clear. I was part of CPB's team of station managers who consulted with them around HD radio when it was first introduced to the public and community media system. I was actually on the panel that determined the funding structure for it. And what I can tell you, having witnessed the evolution of HD radio since, is that that service is far from being a relevant alternative. It has a long way to go for it to be better than what people can do on their mobile phones, what they're getting from XM, Sirius Satellite, etc. In part because there never was a killer application to it. There was no way to time shift the programming there. And the other issue as to why it didn't work is that the automobile industry didn't embrace it for quite a while. They just have in recent years. And then the third reason, which I think is the most important for us to consider, is that if you can't devise and fund a successful marketing strategy for your terrestrial signal, your primary signal, there's no way in hell you're going to promote your HD. And so no one's going to know about it. And no one's going to know of that content. It's almost laughable to me that we have stations that are investing a lot of time and energy in HD, their HD2 signal, when their audience numbers for their primary signal are so low to begin with. It's an utter waste of time, in my opinion, as someone who has, like I said, been invested in the progress of that from day one.
Well, Max, That's one way of looking at it. But what I look at is I'm in a car now, 2014 car, BMW. I've got several other friends have HD radios in their car. They don't have programs available. But a lot of the point I made about HD was the beauty of HD is if you have individual broadcasts with HD, it costs us much less than terrestrial. That's the number one point. The number two point is that I believe it is up to the programmer to promote and to bring in audience. That is the great opportunity for testing, so to speak, because in my opinion, as a programmer, professional programmer, or professional radio, not community radio for the last 30 years, I always put the onus on programmers. It's their job to help build the audience, not the station or the foundation. So I think I look at it from a total different perspective, with a cost perspective, as well as putting more of the onus on those who want to be broadcasters, those who want to do this. So mm-hmm. I look at it totally different than you do.
I respect that. Again, I'm more speaking in terms of what I've noticed system-wide, that very few stations... No, I hear you completely. What I'm saying is, I don't know of any successful promotional strategies, whether it be by the individual hosts or the stations themselves, for HD. I just have not seen it. And I think the issue, most people don't know they even have HD 2 and 3 options. And look, here in D.C., some of you may know, those of you from D.C., WHUR, for a good 2 or 3 years, made a major push of their HD channels. And to this day, the listenership on those services is extremely low. They promoted the hell out of it. At the top of the hour, they had all kinds of billboards around it. It just didn't resonate with listeners. And so I just guard against...
I'm in agreement with you on that. I'm in agreement with you about that. What I was saying to you is that it was the approach that I think is lacking, because KPFT has been terrestrial for 60-some years, and its marketing approach is, I mean, when you want to compare those two, HD has done damn much better than KPFT has done with terrestrial radio. So, that argument is a matter of perspective. It's a matter of how you approach it. It's your attitude for it.
Okay. I'm with you. All right. So please ask for the floor before you ask another question. Thank you.
Thanks,
Adriana.
Thank you. First of all, can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah. We can hear you.
Hello? Okay, perfect. First of all, the good news, somebody had to say, we have a program in KPFT that is Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m., and the name is Nuestra Palabra, Latino Writers Have Interested. We have the archives of this program, KPFT program, are maintained, the radio archive, by the University of Houston in the digital archive. The Houston Public Library Hispanic Special Collections have all their hard copies. Nuestra Palabra is having a literary extravaganza celebrating their 21st anniversary, April the 3rd, at the Museum of Fine Arts of Houston. We have our Julia with James, and we, you know what, this, the only one that is talking about this is NPR. Even when we have, this is the KPFT program. That, to talk about one of the good things that is happening. But you know, Machi, and you normally mention the Committee of Inclusion report that KPFT did. And you saw what that means. And if you see now at the LSP, the new LSP, 75% of this new LSP is white. We have 3 African Americans, 1 Asian American, 1 Indian American descendant, and 1 Hispanic Hispanic member. 6 in 24, 75%. The Committee of Inclusion report, important, is to be used at elections, according to our bylaws, but everybody to solve this issue. And you see that exactly happened the opposite. 75% of the actual new MSC is white, white America. That's what we have. In the city of Houston, that obviously the first minority is the Hispanic community. But, well, yeah, that, you know, that is part of the issue. And the second issue is, do we still have him, that is a question for you, Matthew, do we still have him an attorney? Because Bob Gardner is a delegate that is being illegally removed from the KPFCLC, and is not answering from our lawyers. It's not any resources that people can use to avoid some illegal actions like this, that is against the bylaw, it's against every the California Corporation Code, it's against everything that is happening. You know, and what's happening, we have questions in January, or probably even December of last year, that went to the council, and we don't have answers. In the meantime, that the time keep passing by, the board keep becoming more and more white, like I said, 70% now, and they are now in a revenge attitude, you know, taking members without any legal basis, denying what, if you want to remove something or somebody, they might not give you exactly how you need to proceed. And we are not doing it. You know, we have now in the meeting, we have people yelling at the public. If somebody giggles or somebody talks, people say, you know, I'm warning you. I mean, this is, please go and listen to the audio posted. This is happening in our station. This is part of Pacifica. And according to what was said before, the CAD of KPFT is working since 2018 and was approved by the members according to our bylaw by the LSP, and is working for 2 years, like we always select according to the bylaw of people, because the previous one, the one that was said before that was so active, wasn't working since 2017. Okay? We have a CAD that is working, yeah. And all the meetings and the reports are coming to the LSP and are being posted, and the meetings are being posted, and the call from the scheduled meetings are being posted on the Pacifica website. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, well, I didn't, unfortunately, it was hard for me to understand everything you said. I think I got most of it, and I'm hoping I can respond as best I can. First of all,
let me
just say I'm glad Otis confirmed some things that maybe I didn't have the ability to confirm in terms of active hosting community advisory boards. So I'll check with Otis to get a more accurate understanding of how successful we are at presenting CABs, qualified CABs throughout the system. I've never been able to verify more than two, but it sounds like we may have more. That's good. I share your concerns around the lack of diversity on our CABs. The way they're structured now, the way our whole governance structure is it's all about the factions. It's all about a $25 minimum donation and the popular vote. And the fact that we've got factions voting across the country are lining up groups, they're setting up voting infrastructures that penetrate across markets. I think it's so debilitating to, you know, the spirit of what Pacifica should be, that it's tragic to me that it's ever formed in that way. And the fact that we're such a divided organization to begin with is just really tragic and pathetic. It's one of the reasons why I think a slotted board is so necessary, because I think slotted boards in large part neutralize the political nature of what has formed thus far in Pacifica governance.
If you're bringing people on because of functional capacity, because of demographic dynamics, geographic dynamics, and you're trying to match that as to reflect the community that you're serving, you don't run into these issues. The boards that I governed in when I was in Cleveland were dynamically diverse. They reflected Indian, Asian, African-American, Hispanic, Caucasian members of the community. They represented people from the inner suburbs, the outer suburbs, the city itself. And they had disciplines that they were experts in across the spectrum of things that we thought were important for us to have an understanding about or advice around. And so my hope, again, is to appeal to the better angels. I'm hoping that the folks like all of you on this call who recognize the value in diversity, inclusion, and equity would be behind this motion, understanding that the only way we're going to truly be a reflective, progressive organization is if we get beyond the political factions that right now I earmark as the number one and most important issue undermining the progress of this organization. That was a hard thing to put on paper, put in my PowerPoint, and take around the country because obviously I work at the pleasure of the board. But when I look at the injury to the progress of this organization, there is no other place you can start with than the makeup of our governance. And at some point, the people who are in position now have to say what's in the best interest of the organization, not me. How can I be selfless in public service to the greater good of Pacifica and progressives around the country, but most importantly or directly in the markets we serve? If we can do that, if we can call ourselves to that question, then I'm hoping that more people will come on board. When I went around and went to the stations, all five, and I spoke to the members, I'm sorry, the board members, the LSB members, the staff, and the volunteer programs, I shared this idea of slotted boards. Across the board, I got support. Even today, I got an email from someone who went to one of those presentations and supported the idea. So my point to you is I believe we're ready for transformative change. I believe that our membership is ready for it. There are members of the board who don't think we can get the vote for this. But I believe that now more than ever, the membership is ready for transformation because they recognize how dysfunctional our boards have become because of the way that we're structured and the fact that they've become so political and divisive. I'll leave it at that.
It is Benito.
Go ahead, Benito. And we're approaching 11 o'clock here. We're past the time for this what was to be this open session. So at 11, I'm going to adjourn. I mean, I'm going to hang up now. So this will be the last question. Go ahead.
All right, so I would say, number one, with regard to the governance, I would agree with Maxine. I think half the world agrees with Maxine on the dysfunctional nature, the undemocratic nature of this current system. So I think there's something to be said about these categories. So that's number one, but I just wanted to respond to Maxie saying that with regard to CGTN, I don't know, honestly, I don't know whether they have radio capacity or it's just TV, much less would I have any idea about how hard it would be to convert from one platform to the other, assuming that they don't. Have you know, that they don't have radio capacity today. What I do know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is that anybody who gets into listening to that station or that channel ain't never going back to American TV. That's what I know.
Well, do this, man. If you can share with me their name, I'll do the research, I promise.
I'll send that to you.
I appreciate that.
That's like, I forget the dude's name, one of the saxophonists with Duke Ellington said that, you know, I joined the Duke Ellington band about 40 years ago. And when I did that, and afterward he died, I didn't know what else to do. There was nowhere else to go.
Right.
And so
Now
I listen to classical music.
I hear you.
That's what the
dude
said.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you bringing it to my attention. I look forward to reviewing it and seeing if there's a possibility, because I would love to have an alternative, particularly one that's progressive. So thank you for that.
Yes, Dwayne.
Madam Chair, I really believe this. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. I believe this conversation has been very enlightening. I think the exchange is very healthy. I do want to speak with the ED off the line at some point in the future to see, because I uncharacteristically agree with him that the foundation and its governance have become too political. And what I would like to know is, how do you undo it? Like the Democrats want to pack the Supreme Court to try to make it more fair. How do you, with the entrenched concept of gaming the election and actually having abject control of all movement now, moving forward, how do you undo this?
Yeah, well, what I would say, Dwayne, is I'm encouraged by the fact that a member of the majority faction, who probably doesn't have motivation, if you will, to have change, you could argue. I'm not saying that's how they feel. But that a member of that faction, if you will, was the one who embraced the idea and asked me to work with her on conceptualizing. So that's a good thing. What I really realized when I went around and toured the stations is that people who were part of the quote-unquote majority faction actually like this idea. She's not alone. Jan is not alone in endorsing the notion that this slotted board concept has some promise for a Pacifica organization. And so I think there's a whole lot more people for it than are against it, because I think we all acknowledge, as you just said, that there's a dysfunction that is endemic in our system, and the only way we're going to get out of it is if we look at how the boards can be much more useful. You'll remember, and I've said this a couple of times, I'll repeat it for the purpose of this call. When I asked the staffs at all five stations if they benefited from having a local station board, universally the response was no. For the very fact that we have local station boards that are not viewed as valuable by the stations themselves is a travesty unto itself. It means that in some respect, the local station boards are operating purely for their own enjoyment, for their own ego and pleasure of being in a position of governance. My dad once told me there's some people who go on boards because that's all they have in their life of value, to be able to say I'm. Now, I'm not hoping that that's the case. I mean, I'm not saying that's the case with the members of the PNB or even the local station boards, but what we want to move away from are people who are on the board who don't contribute time, talent, and or treasure. We need people who can actually move us forward, move the progressive movement forward, whatever that means in the area that you live in, and perhaps this country. So that's the goal. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that the purpose is genuine, it's sincere, and it's progressive, and I'm just hoping
that what I feel is the case, and that is that the people are ready for change, is true. And we'll see.
Ms. Nancy, I just want to comment on this issue about the board, the dysfunction in the board. What I see is the way it is set up. It's set up to sort of seesaw back and forth, and people spend so much time trying to get power for their faction. Although when you talk to each person on the faction, everybody has a very similar goal for Pacifica. But we don't deal with that, because what we mostly deal with is these power struggles that have nothing to do with what Pacifica is about. Some people are good at these tactics, but they're doing it for what they feel is a good reason, for a good purpose, but they don't realize that the people that they're trying to get power from on the other side have the same goals for Pacifica that they have. So it's just that it's not that we have bad people. We have very passionate people on these boards that try to and most of the arguments are about broken bylaws and doing things properly, and people tend to, and there, not to say that there aren't broken bylaws, but if people can get away with it to put their faction in power, I've seen neither side is lily white, but it's crazy because both people on both sides want the same thing for Pacifica, and it's just this artificial system of governance that we have that pits us against each other. And it's somehow we have to figure out how to re-engineer it so that we're all working together and are in the struggle and solidarity together.
I'm with you.
No one's fault is what I'm trying to say. It's the system that we're in that they've given us back in 2001, and somehow we need to get out of this whirl. What do you call those whirlpools that you're in that just keep dragging you down? We're in sort of a whirlpool. Okay, what were you going to say now? I'm done.
I have nothing else. Nothing else to add.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for a nice discussion. I wish we had more time to do this. Look forward to having a virtual meeting where maybe we can do more of this. And see you all next week. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate the time and energy. It was wonderful. And Dwayne, hit me up when you need to.
Good night.
When you're ready. Have a good one, guys.
Again.